Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Happy Tuesday morning to you. Thank you for listening. 35 minutes after the hour. So to come on the program today, in the next hour, we'll hear from former State Senator Trip Pittman and former Governor Don Singelman talking some politics with us. So please stay tuned if you can. Join us now on the line. He represents the folks up in the Shoals, Muscle Shoals to be precise. And he is the chairman of the Alabama delegation at the RNC. So glad we could make time to get him on. State Representative Andrew Sorrell joins us. Representative, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing really well, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. So where are you right now?
I am in Huntsville, Alabama right now at work. So I flew home yesterday after all the activities at the convention. I don't have anything to do today other than just watch the convention on TV tonight. And then tomorrow I'll fly out to Washington, D.C. to go to the White House on Thursday night for Trump's big announcement, the acceptance speech at the White House.
So that's you're getting some COVID airline miles there. What was Charlotte like being there? I haven't missed a convention since this is my first one since 2000 that I missed. But what was that experience like for you?
You know, it was very different. I mean, back in 2016, it was you're elbowing your way through crowds, and there's just hard to walk. It's hard to get to the bathroom during the breaks. And then yesterday morning, I was actually going on the Dale Jackson Show up in Huntsville, and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to step out and find a quiet place to talk. Well, that was very easy. I just stepped out in the lobby, and there was nobody there. So there were 336 of us there, six from each state, plus there was some media and a few staff, and that was it. There were maybe 400 people in that huge room. We were all 8 feet apart. Very, very different feel this year.
Yeah, I would imagine so. You got to make the big announcement. I thought you did a great job yesterday talking about the state and pledging Alabama's 50 delegates yesterday. It has to be such a unique experience to be thinking in those terms, and everybody in the country is watching you.
Well, you know, how do you cover everything that's important about Alabama in just 60 seconds and still have time to say, you know, we cast our 50 delegates for Donald Trump? I just picked out the highlights. I had to give a shout-out to my hometown of Muscle Shoals and the music. I mentioned Mobile and the shipbuilding. I mentioned the auto manufacturing. I mentioned the rocket and defense industry in Huntsville, the white sandy beaches in the Gulf Coast. I tried to work as much in as I possibly could about Alabama. And, of course, I mentioned both the Crimson Tide and the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, if you mention one and not the other, then that could hurt your future political chances.
You know, John Merrill gets away with saying just roll tide. He's the only politician that can get away with that. The rest of us all have to work both of them in. And I also mentioned the most important Senate race in the country, which is happening right here in Alabama with Trump-endorsed coach Tommy Tuberville. And I mentioned how we were going to win back our Senate seat from... I did not even use his name. I just said our Democrat senator. I didn't even want to give him the name ID and the visibility at the convention. But I did mention that we're working hard to win that seat back for Alabama.
What was the discussions like among the delegates that were there? Do you get a sense of optimism? Because I feel like last night's convention was certainly it made me feel a little bit better about November 3rd.
Well, yeah, it was much better than the Democrat convention. I mean, it was like somebody described it as watching the Home Shopping Network. I mean, it was kind of dry, and it was basically like, hey, our guy's not very good, but he's not terrible like Trump, so vote for him. That was the essence of their convention. Ours was very different. You start off with 26-year-old Charlie Kirk, who gave, I thought, an excellent speech. You had the couple from St. Louis that defended their home with their guns because the police were nowhere to be seen, and then they got charged with a crime. You had the father of a Parkland shooting victim. You had several African Americans that I thought just did a fantastic job. Herschel Walker, Senator Tim Scott, I forget the name of the lady running for Congress in Baltimore.
Kim Clayson.
I thought they really hit it out of the park.
Yeah. And so you did get, I thought, a good taste of diversity there. But did you have conversations with people while you were in charge? What were they telling you?
I did. I had the opportunity to meet several people from around the country. I was seated beside Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas, who was their delegation chairman. He got to announce Texas delegates, and we had some really good conversations. And I think that there was a level of excitement there that you wouldn't have had if the convention had been exclusively virtual. I mean, yes, we were all spaced out 8 feet, but you got to believe when Mike Pence and Donald Trump came in the room and addressed us, there was some energy in there. We were happy to see them.
I mean, it's so important getting that energy. Like you said, the Democrats, it just felt like the world's largest Zoom call that, you know, and the way Republicans, that contrast, it looks like a real television event versus somebody sitting on their couch in front of their laptop. I think that just adds such a much a more dramatic element to it.
Well, if you look at the C-SPAN numbers, there were six or seven times as many people watching the C-SPAN live stream of the Republican convention as there were the Democrat convention. And I think you see that in the polls. When these polls that judge voter enthusiasm for Donald Trump, where he has just a wide, wide lead. And I think that's how he won in 2016. It was his people cared more, and they went out to vote for a candidate that they really were passionate about and really believed in. I remember in Lauderdale County, we had 6,000 new registered voters in a county of 90,000 people. And you got to believe 90% of those people were registering just to go vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to play out again this time around. Are you getting that sense, your neck of the woods, that while Alabama is certain to go, I think, Republican, pretty good chance it will, do people seem to be getting more engaged in the political process right now?
Yeah, so you're pretty familiar with my area, the Shoals, up in the extreme upper northwest of the state, and we're one of the last Democrat bastions really in the state, certainly in the northern part of the state at least. And we've gradually flipped that area. Over the last 10 years, you've seen all the legislative seats flip. You've seen the county commissions flip. You've seen all the other various seats. We're winning all of those now, too. And, you know, the union folks, when I was campaigning for state legislature, they were telling me, listen, man, you know, I was for Donald Trump, but I couldn't tell anybody. And, hey, man, I'll vote for you, but I've got to put your opponent's sign in my yard so the union doesn't find out.
Right.
So maybe they're not quite as vocal about it as they should be, but these people are Trump supporters in my area, and I feel a lot of energy.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a part of the state that it was kind of a laggard when we were looking at, you know, which is eventually going to catch up and go Republican. And it looks like with you and Dr. Stutz up there, that is solidly Colbert County, as is in Franklin County, are solidly Republican now.
Well, you know, they really are. For the first time in 2018, we flipped it to where there's now more Republican elected officials in the county than Democrats. We still got a long ways to go in Colbert. Now, in Lauderdale, I believe there's only one Democrat left, and we're going to win that seat here in 2020. So when these counties do flip, they flip hard. They're going to be 100% Republican in Lauderdale County, and it only took 10 years for that to happen.
Yeah, and it's remarkable, the progress. Like you said, when I do go up there, you go to Republican meetings and stuff, and you actually have people, you know, you have crowds. Whereas probably 10, 15 years ago, I bet the Republican parties up there could meet in a phone booth.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to meetings where there were just five or six other Republicans, and now what you have is you have full executive committees. You have, you know, competitions. If there's a vacancy on just a committee seat, there might be two or three people there to run just for that committee seat. You know, the Shoals Republican Club, oftentimes it's not uncommon for there to be 50, 60, 70 people at that breakfast, which if you'd have told me that 10 years ago, I just wouldn't have believed it.
Andrew, let's move on to how are things going up there in your neck of the woods with coronavirus, COVID-19, the guidelines? How are your folks handling it?
You know, we haven't had anything happen in my area like is happening in Tuscaloosa with, you know, the shutdown of the bars and alcohol and all that. We haven't had any of our mayors try to do anything like that. You know, I don't feel like our area has been as much of a hot spot as some of the other areas of the state. And I think the numbers are moving in the right direction. You know, the state's consistently been under 1,000 cases a day now. The seven-day average is well under 1,000 a day. And I think that's really good. And I want to mention, too, at the convention, you know, somebody got onto me on Facebook. You got a picture and you're not in a mask. I'm like, listen, everybody in there, we were 8 feet apart the majority of the time. And second, we were all tested for coronavirus twice, including as soon as we arrived. That was the safest place in the United States to be with regards to coronavirus.
Yeah, because you're all, you assume you had to test negative or you wouldn't get to go.
Yeah, you would get a phone call. You know, they were running the test overnight, basically, and they got our cell phone numbers, and they said, all right, this comes out positive, we'll let you know.
That seems like I would have to imagine the same protocol that's going to be in place on Thursday for your trip to the White House, right?
You know, it would not surprise me a bit if I had to get another corona test as soon as I arrived. I wasn't expecting the one when I got there. They didn't tell us. And if you haven't had a corona test, they're not exactly pleasant. But, you know, it was part of the process. And what we didn't need is a story coming out of the convention about how, you know, 100 people left there with coronavirus or something. That would have been a terrible, terrible thing for Donald Trump. It would have given the media easy fodder to go after him with. So I'm glad they took the precautions that they did.
Yeah, and then I think with anything with the White House, where do you expect to go on Thursday? Is this your first trip to the White House?
It is. I've never been. I've been to D.C. before, but I've never been to the White House. I'm expecting very strict security. I'm hoping it doesn't rain. I know I spoke to Congressman Adderholt. He's planning to be there. So I'm thinking there will be a couple hundred congressmen, senators maybe, you know, in the front with the good seats. The rest of us maybe kind of standing around filling out the back. I don't know how many people you can fit into the, you know, into the South Lawn and keep them all social distance. I understand it's not a very big place, but I'm just honored that I got an invitation to go. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be really cool. We're going to get you back on Friday and tell us a little bit about that experience. But I think the speech, it won't take much to top Biden, Joe Biden, but this is where I think these clutch moments is where President Trump really, really thrives.
Well, you know, yesterday, if you noticed, Trump was not using a teleprompter. That was all off the cuff. You know, Mike Pence was just off the cuff. And Trump spoke. I didn't time it, but it felt like it was probably an hour or so that he was there speaking to us. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he and his speechwriters come up with for Thursday night. I think it's going to be a positive, uplifting message. I think you'll see a continuation of the theme of law and order and, you know, supporting our police and all that. And I think that that's going to play really well to, you know, the suburban housewives in America.
And we'll wind it down on this, Andrew. There's a lot going on in the state right now with your position in the legislature. What's your latest feeling on where we are with statewide with COVID and with the way the governor's handling it?
You know, I was a pretty vocal critic, first of all, of the shutdown. I didn't even think that the shutdown itself was constitutional. I know there were some laws passed in Alabama in the 50s that allowed the governor, and really it's the state health officer. I think we gave the state health officer too much power. And it's scary how fast people become okay with their liberties being infringed. And that's something we've got to be really careful about, especially in an emergency. So I hope we look at some of those things when we go back into session next February.
Yeah, but there just doesn't seem like there's much of an appetite for a special session, does there?
No, I don't think that the governor can do a special session while we're still under a mask mandate and all that. It would look pretty hypocritical, I think, for us to try to go back into session. When we left session, we were all expecting one or two special sessions to be called later in the year. Right now, I'm busy planning a trip for October because I don't think we're going to have one.
So you think it's a foregone conclusion, and it's just, you know, the word on the street is, well, they'll tell you publicly is the threat of COVID is too intense that we don't need to call these members back in. And there's another school of thought out there, well, the governor is really worried about you guys in the legislature coming in and taking away some of her executive power, or, you know, the state health officer's executive power. Are you hearing anything like that?
I haven't heard that, but I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not the only legislator that's concerned about the amount of power that we've turned over to just one or two people. And, you know, you've got mayors coming out just with basically executive orders just saying, all right, we're going to shut down this business. All right, you can't serve alcohol after 11 o'clock. You know, you can still serve Coke or water. That's safe, but alcohol's not. I mean, just crazy things that if you analyze the policies, they don't really even make that much sense. But we don't know where we're going to be in a couple months. We may have a coronavirus vaccine in a couple months, and this may all blow over. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, it is the use of government power. We're learning kind of just willy nilly here that the apparently a municipality can shut down businesses under an emergency order, and that I wasn't aware of that, but apparently that's a thing. And I guess you guys, when you finally do get back, that's something you're going to look at.
Absolutely. It's scary. I mean, I own two different businesses, and fortunately, both of mine were classified as essential. Now, why a college bookstore was classified as essential, to be honest with you, I'm not really sure. My gun store, I 100% agree, was essential, but it's scary how fast the government can just cut off your source of income, and we don't need to sacrifice the permanency of freedom on the altar of immediate fear.
And Andrew, we got to leave it there, but I want to thank you for making time for us, and be safe heading up to D.C.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it, and looking forward to speaking with you on Friday after I go to the White House.
All right. House State Representative Andrew Cirelli is the chairman of the Alabama delegation at the RNC, and he's a state representative up in Muscle Shoals. Got to take a timeout. Be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows